Good morning, Oregon, and thank you once again for loading me down and queuing me up. I'm Finn J.D. John with another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. You'll find the full details at offbeatoregon.com. Do check that out when you get a chance. First, though, I've got an announcement to make and then a story to tell you. First of all, the announcement. I'm having to put the Stories, Legends, and Lies of Oregon series, the Thursday morning series, I'm having to put that on hold for a month or two. As you probably know, my real job is at Oregon State University, and it is demanding a little bit more of my time than I am able to give it while simultaneously covering that angle. So I'm going to put it on hold. It probably will be dark for 2 months, probably right up until spring break. So for pretty much the rest of January and all of February and a little bit of March, Thursdays will be a dark day, with no Offbeat Oregon History column posted. So with that said, let's turn now to today's story, which is brand new on the website, about the boozy generosity of a Wall Street financial wizard by the name of Thomas Lawson, who just happened to be in town and betting on the Prineville baseball team when they were being soundly beaten by the Silver Lake team. Silver Lake was beating them for reasons that were a little controversial. Luckily, Mr. Lawson knew just what to do. Here we go. Things looked grim for the Prineville Nine that summer day in 1910. The little Central Oregon town's baseball team was getting its clock cleaned by the Silver Lake Ball Club. The score was 9-0, and the game was only half played, shaping up to be a bloodbath. The game was the third in a best-of-three tournament, a sort of good-natured grudge match between the two Central Oregon towns. Prineville was playing host and had invited Silver Lake to bring its best and its brightest, its fastest running and its hardest hitting, to come see who was best. But after the first game, an unexpectedly brutal loss at the hands of the visitors, the Prineville fans learned the truth. Silver Lake boosters had gone to Portland and hired some professional ringers for the occasion. Now, this wasn't cheating exactly. Nobody had told anybody that they couldn't hire mercenaries for the event. It simply hadn't occurred to the Prineville boys to even consider the possibility. Obviously, though, it had occurred to someone. The team that was taking the field against Prineville, sporting Silver Lake colors, was mostly made up of guys from other places. Guys who paid the bills hitting baseballs. Prineville's motley collection of amateurs, cowboys and shopkeepers who played ball on the weekends, well, they didn't have a chance. Still, they managed to rally somehow and tie it up for the second game of the series. No one was really sure how they managed it, and it felt a little miraculous, but there it was. It's actually quite possible that the Silver Lake pros let them win so that the series could go into three games. In any case, going into the final game, the two towns were even up. But now it looked like Prineville was done for. Silver Lake was about to put it away. Or were they? See, there was a stranger in town that weekend who had a plan for making sure they didn't. And what's more, he had a cool $1,000 riding on it. $1,000 in 1910, you know, that was real money. That stranger was one Thomas William Lawson. Thomas Lawson was a very eccentric, somewhat infamous man. He was, essentially, a reformed shark. He'd made a mammoth pile of money in the course of a career on Wall Street that culminated in the most notorious stock market swindle of the Gilded Age, a swindle that he orchestrated with fellow robber baron plutocrats William Rockefeller and Henry Rogers. The three of them formed an empty shell company called Amalgamated Copper. Then they bought up Anaconda Copper for $37 million, paying for it with IOUs, and set about whipping up a public feeding frenzy over shares in Amalgamated, which was just an empty shell still. Keep in mind that this was the late 1800s when the telephone networks and all of the power grids were being built. Copper was a hot commodity. Well, the publicity was Lawson's particular specialty. People tended to trust him, whereas Rockefeller and Rogers had no such advantage. Now, he moved to trade on that trust, declaring Amalgamated the best, most sure thing investment he'd ever seen, and when people asked him about the company, he told them, flat out, go your limit. Then, someone figured out the bait and switch. The bottom fell out. Amalgamated went from $175 to $30 a share. Several investors, ruined after having borrowed heavily to buy shares, are reported to have killed themselves. This wasn't his only swindle, but it was by far the biggest and the most successful. It pushed his personal net worth to $50 million. But he was haunted by the aftermath of this big deed of villainy. Cracks started appearing in his sanity soon, and they got worse after his wife died. Finally, in 1904, he tried to redeem himself by writing a confession of sorts, a tell-all titled Frenzied Finance, which ran as a serial for 2 solid years in Everybody's Magazine. It sold magazines like you would not believe and had a noticeable impact on public pressure to crack down on the trusts. After that, he was heartily loathed by Wall Street, which suited him just fine. He'd made his pile. He was done with all that. Now Lawson was in Prineville, looking for a nice country spread to give his daughter, Dorothy, and his son-in-law, Hal, as a wedding present. He just happened to be in town for the game and no doubt felt that putting a little money on the home team would help warm up the welcome the newlyweds would get in their new hometown. And Hal, himself a one-time professional baseball player, must have been especially interested in the game. Chances are he was already thinking about joining the Prineville team. But for Lawson, betting on the home team was one thing. Losing that bet was another. Lawson had not made his fortune by placing bets and letting them lose. It was time to go and do in the bullpen what he'd done so often on the trading floor. This jovial and charismatic stock promoter, the chief salesman of the biggest bamboozle of the Golden Age, knew just what to do. Smiling broadly, he made his way down to where the Silver Lake players were resting and catching their breath, waiting for the game to resume. No doubt he was at his boisterous and hearty best as he stepped up to the members of the visiting ball club, although the records don't mention that part. What they do mention are his words. Quote, "The drinks are on me," he roared. An hour or two later, at the end of the 9th inning, the final score was 10-9 Prineville, and Lawson had run up one humdinger of a bar tab. But then he'd won $1,000 to pay it off with. And his family's full and enthusiastic acceptance by the jubilant Prineville community was a done deal. Which was good, not just for the newlyweds, but for the entire state of Oregon. Because Thomas Lawson's son-in-law and daughter were none other than Hal and Dorothy Lawson McCall, and their firstborn son would be Thomas William Lawson McCall, known to his friends and to voters as Tom McCall, an Oregonian whom you just might have heard of once or twice. Well, that's it for today's episode. If you'd like some more information about Offbeat Oregon history, you can get it all at our central website, offbeatoregon.com. You'll find a complete catalog, 210 columns, going back to 2008, plus links out to text and audio feeds on RSS and iTunes, and the Facebook page and Twitter feed. You'll also find on the website full citations to sources for this story, which include works by David Braley, Brent Walth, and Dorothy Lawson McCall. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com. It was written by Carmen Ficarra. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, please see offbeatoregon.com/cc. If you are coming to Corvallis, drop me a line. Let's grab a cup of coffee and talk history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon. Well, that's it for today, and that's it for the weekend. In coming attractions come Monday, we're going to be talking about Robin Reed, probably the best wrestler in the history of the sport, never defeated, Olympic medalist, and a failed real estate promoter. If you're old enough to remember a sort of a haunted looking unfinished building at Devil's Lake in Lincoln City, that was his place. He lost his shirt on it. Very interesting man, not necessarily a particularly pleasant one, but a very interesting fellow. And I'll have that story for you after about 6 a.m. on Monday morning. In the meantime, go out and fill up the rest of today, and the weekend too, with good stuff. Bye now.